Onak, tuak, tenak, tenak, even move my you forward. My name is Alija Adebowale. It's still the best sporting show. Looking at me today, I'm wearing something Chinese. It's saying Manchester United is the best club in the world. That's how we start the show today. It's still New Sisters Sports. I had the whole gang with me today. I have Kachi with me. I have Olawale as well with me. On a band radio scope, and of course on our YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. I'll let you guys introduce yourself. Start with Oro Google. G.
Sports fans, as always, always a big pleasure and privilege to be here discussing sports for your viewership and listening pleasure. Arsenal seems to be more active in the transfer market than Manchester United, and I really don't know why. We also have our favorite son to discuss today, Kyrie Irving. I'm looking forward to what we'll say about it. Stay tuned for a good show.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Kachi. Olali. We can't hear you, Olali.
Fans around the world, welcome to the show. Hello, sporting fans around the world. Welcome to the show. Off-season, this is the period for the off-season drama, both in the NBA and the footballing world. As usual, Manchester United we will sign, we are negotiating, we are linked, we are confident, we are working around the clock. We are until the transfer windows closes. And in the NBA, as expected, the free agency drama is going on. A lot of permutations here and there. We'll keep you in touch as the show goes on. Welcome once again.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Lali, for that introduction. We'll start with tennis world, actually. We'll start with Serena Williams being a white card again for the Wimbledon Open. And talks have been up. How is she going to perform at this Wimbledon Open? Is this just going to be a kind of comeback for her? Come back into the tennis world and do what she knows how to do best, or does she have an outside chance of even getting into the quarterfinals? Iga Swiatek looks to be the only person that, from my own standpoint, from where I'm sitting, that could potentially give Serena a run for her money. We have the young lads like Steffi Sloan, Coco Gauff, and the girl that cannot stop changing coaches, Mada Kuna of the UK. If I'm wrong, or Kachi, please correct me.
Raducanu.
Yeah, that keeps changing coaches as she pleases. Kachi, I'm gonna start with you. Do you think Serena have an outside chance of probably getting to the semifinals? She has been out for so long, and of course that would play a major part playing against these young and athletic ladies, even if they are inconsistent.
Yes, thanks, Debo. The truth is, you really cannot rule out Serena as long as she brings her A game. And I think there's really anything that can defeat or can stop Serena. It's her mental state of mind and where she is with her psyche, so to speak. But particularly when you look at the bracket, apart from Angelique Kerber, who is in her side of the bracket, and Osorio Serrano, the Colombian wonder kid, so to speak, I can't really see anything stopping her. I think what really would be the big factor is how much games has she played, and we know she hasn't played a lot, to warm herself up to the tournament, which starts this week. Let's not forget that she will still be one of the biggest draws, and she will pull one of the biggest crowd and celebrities, even though she's a wild card. Typically, when you start as a wild card, your chances are tougher because you're expected to face the big names or more tougher opponents before you get there. But you said it, you hit the nail on the head. The women's side of the game, of the sport, is riddled with inconsistency, apart from Iga Swiatek. So I think, yes, the chance is there, but only if she's able to overcome the barrier of the mental block of too many injuries, the mental block of not having played enough games before this. She's missed two Grand Slams already. This is the third one. We know she does very well on grass, even though I think she's a hard court specialist. But I don't think this is her tournament to win. I think she will do well enough to prepare herself for the US Open, which I think is ultimately where she can compete well.
She can compete. Perfect. Thank you very much for that, Kachi. on the flip side, Olaale, on the male side, we potentially look at Nadal conquering again, and of course Novak is going to be around as well. What do you think is going to stop Nadal and Djokovic from getting to at least the semifinals?
Yeah, I think Novak Djokovic is going to be the favorite. I think Nadal might likely get to the semifinal, but I think if you ask me who should be the favorite, I think it's Novak. You understand the fact that if not for the controversy that happened earlier in the year concerning his vaccination status, I think he was in a better position to have won the Australian Open. Of course, French Open, we all knew that for as long as Nadal is alive, it will take something extra for you to beat him there, probably until he retires. But coming to grass is not the most, is not the favorite, as in the most, the best surface for favorite court for Nadal. And Novak has a bit of good history when it comes to, what do you call it? And considering the fact that he has missed out on the Australian Open, he's potentially going to miss out on the US Open. This is probably his only chance of winning a Grand Slam this year. And not falling behind too far from Rafael Nadal. So for me, I think he's going to be the favorite, and I guess he's going to win it.
Okay, Kachi, I'm going to come to you right at your jugular right now, and it's a fact that Djokovic has given up at participating at the US Open because of the vaccination stuff, and we saw countries like Norway coming out today to say, yo, we are banning vaccination discrimination right now. If you like, be vaccinated. If you like, don't be vaccinated. At this point, should we still be talking about? Because honestly, we've had COVID. Everyone has COVID, whether they are vaccinated or not. We've seen people that are not vaccinated that came out of it. We've seen people that were vaccinated and, of course, they died of COVID. So at this point, should it be a major issue for someone like, not even talking about Novak specifically, but should it stop people from participating in individual games like this, like golf, like the US Open at this point in time? We've been over this vaccination thingy for almost 2 years now. What do you think?
I think in an utopian world, this should not, it should be a non-issue. I mean, like you said, we look to have overcome the worst and, you know, taking it in the chest on our chin, the worst that the COVID or the pandemic could bring, and the world seems to be moving away from it. On a lighter note, it's always very funny how when something political, like a war or a protest, the Black Lives Matter protest happens, COVID also seems to take a back burner and it does not infect people that gather to protest. But when all those things go away, we see COVID come back again. But that's just so they like to know. However, in spite of all this, you must realize that politics sometimes can be petty. And the case of COVID has gotten to a case of political pettiness. But in this same political pettiness, you must also respect a country's sovereignty. What makes a country is the fact that they are sovereign from external influences, and they can take a decision and stand by it as a nation. Right now, the United States. The United States, particularly the state of New York, where the Roland Garros will take place in Flushing Meadows, has been, because of the amount of death they experience in that state, are taking a very hard stance on it. Now, I'm not saying between now and the next 6 to 8 weeks, when the Flushing Meadows will open its gates to allow people come in, that certain things may not change. Because not right now, we know in the United States is the issue of Roe versus Wade and any other thing happening with the Supreme Court. So we really don't know how the tide will swing in the future. But right now, in an ideal world, I would say, no, you should not bring politics or policies such as this into individual spots. But we do not live in an ideal world. We also know that the United States is a sovereign nation and they can make a decision. I think that is why Djokovic himself is resigning to fate that, well, because it's not a tournament held in my side of the world, there's really nothing I can do. He's not that powerful to sway, because tennis is not a big sport in the US. Forget the impact of Serena and the likes of Pete Sampras and the like. It is not one of their four major sports, such that there will be a lot of referendum or public outcry to sway opinions. And as such, that Djokovic has to resign himself to fate. So it's sad, but it's the reality.
All right, perfect. I'm pretty sure Lali has a dissenting opinion about that.
No. I actually, I would say I didn't disagree with Kachi. It's just a bit funny, you know, when Kachi said, "You have to respect their sovereignty, what they want." I something that came to my mind, like, unless you are probably not a Qatar, that nobody wants to respect their sovereignty about what they want and what they don't want in their country. Everybody wants them to do what they feel is right, not what Qatar as a country. If you are going to Qatar and you are planning to go and do anyhow, you'll be in jail.
Whether you are a player or you are a fan.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. Kachi, just to add to what you said, respect about sovereignty and whatnot. But the sovereignty does not come into play when they get money from people to come and watch the sports. People that are unvaccinated are equally allowed to come watch the US Open. But somehow,
unvaccinated Americans, not unvaccinated tourists.
Yeah, but somehow.
So it's still their top sovereignty.
But somehow, no, I agree with you. I'm just saying, but somehow, their money makes them entitled to come and watch. But the people that will give the sport the glamour, because they are unvaccinated and it's a single individual that probably would not touch the other person, and it does not stop everybody from having COVID anyways, whether they are vaccinated or unvaccinated. I think we keep having COVID like every three months or 4 months now, and some of us don't even know it anyways.
So to end with that, this would have been a non-issue if the US Open was held in Florida. It's simply because it's in the Democratic state of New York, based on the impact and the amount of deaths they have and the hard line the state is taking. Florida, throughout the whole pandemic, was averse to compulsory vaccination, so to speak.
Yeah.
If it was in Florida, the state of Miami or Texas, by all means.
I just feel it's an understand anyways.
I think it's an understand
and it's extreme, and it does not really make sense to me again. Maybe a year ago it will, but right now. Anyways, we'll move to your favorite guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe like a year ago it makes a little bit of sense to me, but right now it's we are living with it. That's the truth. And everybody is forcing everybody to come to the office right now. And we are getting COVID when we get to the offices. And
ladies and gentlemen, that is what the world does not like. That's
you don't want to go to office.
Anyways, back to sporting issue right now. Core sporting issue. Kyrie could potentially, it was all over it's all over Twitter over the week. Kyrie could potentially move back to LA. Russ Westbrook would be kicked out. Of course, which is...
These are just permutations.
I'm not saying it's what is happening. I said it was all over Twitter that Kyrie could potentially move back to LA.
Russ
Westbrook should be shipped out of LA Lakers. He has not been able to do anything. And of course, AD, that we've not seen anything from me since the championship of 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. We've not seen anything tangible from him. He has decided not to touch basketball or train since off season. And I'm wondering, these guys honestly, this guy should just go away from the LA Lakers, you know. And but the question is, it's just a permutation. It's something that people are thinking about. Some people are even clamored for KD to go back to the Golden State Warriors. Kachi just told me that the Malala said, come to Portland, join me and become a force, which would be terrific if you ask me. That the Malala is a very, very, very solid guy. Joined by KD is going to change, is going to potentially change things for them, you know. And there are other options across the NBA. But my question to you, Kachi, I'll start with you. I'll start with Lawale. My question to your Lawale is, in an ideal world, potentially where will be the best fit for Kyrie? The best fit for him? Is it gonna be going back to LA Lakers, sending him back to Oklahoma City, or as a matter of fact, terminate his contract and tell him, guy, we don't even want to see you in the NBA again, you've been in enough trouble? Olari, I want to start with you.
I think the best place for him is where he is at present. 100%. I think all he needs to do is a bit of self-reflection and take whatever the Brooklyn Nets are offering him. He should ask himself a question: why is the Brooklyn Nets not offering me a max contract? There max is a reason. Deal. I think Kyrie lacks self-reflection, and this is why he's having all these issues. And he should realize that he doesn't have the edge in this case, because if he's going to opt out of his, I think he has up to June 29th, if he's going to opt out of his current contract and become a free agent, most of the teams that Kyrie wants to play for cannot afford to sign him on free agency. They need him to sign for Brooklyn, then trade for him. Except he's going to take a $6 million, catch what they call that, an exceptional
veterans minimum.
He's going to take this veterans minimum of $6 million in in Los Angeles. So I think all these informations that we've been seeing in the media, I think if they were being released by Kyrie's camp, if I'm the Brooklyn Nets, I don't think they need to panic. If he's asking for a signing and trade, they shouldn't grant him. Is it that you accept our offer, or you just go for free and go and sign for the Charlotte Hornets, go and sign for the Sacramento Kings of this world? So for me, that is what I would do. And I think the best place for him, whichever way, is just because the kind of power, influence he's having in Brooklyn, I'm not even sure he can do that in Los Angeles. LeBron is there to hold you accountable. Those guys over there will not allow you, the genie boss of this world will not allow you to come boss, and do anyhow in their organization. So where you are being treated as a king, even though you don't deserve to be treated like that, just stay there. Collect the contract offer they are offering you. I'm not sure it's a bad listing. I think there could be some clause that has to do with how many number of games you play. You see, this is the problem. Kyrie will make you, when you criticize me about basketball, he's going to tell you that there are things bigger than basketball. But he wants to collect the maximum money from basketball. It doesn't add up. You can't have something bigger than basketball in your mind. And also for me, Brooklyn Nets is the best place for him. Collect that money they are offering you. If I'm the Brooklyn Nets, I will not agree to any signing trade. Go and play in Sacramento or Charlotte Hornets.
All right, perfect. Kachi, you were of the opinion that, you said you read it somewhere, talking about Kyrie and KD moving to Los Angeles, the Nets getting the of course ever unfit AD, Russ Westbrook,
two future first round picks
for the Lakers. In 2023 or 2024? The first round.
No, 2027 first round, 2028 first round pick.
Sorry, Kaji, before I go there. 2023 Table 2023, 2024, 2025, 2026.
It's with the New Orleans. It's with Pelicans, New Orleans.
For AD.
Yeah.
So basically, for me,
for
now,
AD, yes.
Do you think if a situation like that occurs, what would be the biggest winner and the biggest loser in that kind of situation?
It's pure and simple. The biggest winner, if potentially that deal goes,
is that gonna happen?
It's a tall dream. Let's put it out there.
Yeah.
This is a tall dream. It's too tall of a dream because it potentially means you are telling the Brooklyn Nets, go back to the rebuilding mode that you have been in before Kyrie and KD came. You know, they are getting the shorter end of the stick without a doubt. One, we know that AD is inconsistent, even though he would be a key piece in their rebuilding, because then that team becomes his team, and he only has a silent partner in a good point guard in Ben Simmons. Who, let's not forget that if Kyrie and KD, who made him come to Brooklyn Nets, should leave,
he might down to again.
He might also enter another mental state that would not make him play. So with Russell Westbrook, if it happens, that will be Russell's fifth team in 5 years. It tells you that Russell is already damaged goods, right? Even if they sign for 2 years and a third-year player option, the Lakers invariably, if that deal goes through, will potentially get a championship. They will get a championship, at least 100%. One championship out of, that is probably the biggest of the big threes in the big three era. Getting a Kyrie, LeBron, and KD. Because those are shooters they will surround LeBron with shooters. Nobody shoots the ball as sweetly as a 7-foot Kevin Durant does. And we know that Kyrie can also generate his own shot, either by playing the pick and roll, which is good at all isolation basketball with as well. But I don't want to go too much into this because technically this is not. But one thing that may happen is Kyrie only moving to the Lakers. During the course of the week, I listened to this podcast. It's called the I Am Athlete podcast, hosted by former NFL players Brandon Marshall and LeSean McCoy. Shout out to Brandon Marshall and LeSean McCoy. And they interviewed Kyrie. And they potentially asked Kyrie. And Kyrie came out to say he knows that based on what he knows now, if he knew it then, he wouldn't have forced his way out of Cleveland. And they were like, okay, how many championships do you think he would have gotten if you remained together? And he said something, we did not even know how this rumor was that. He said, I might even be in LA right now. So I know Kyrie himself is mulling this. He already gave a list of four teams to the Nets to say, if we cannot agree on an extension, please, I need a potential sign and trade with the Lakers, the Clippers, the Knicks, and the 76ers. But if 76ers, we can knock that out because it will mean James Harden goes back the other way. I think that bridge has been burnt. Yeah. The Clippers, I don't know if they want to add Kyrie to Paul George and Kawhi. I still think something good can happen there. So the Knicks, I don't know if they want to sign somebody who openly betrayed them after everybody thought they were going to the Knicks and they went to the Nets. So it leaves the Lakers as the viable option. But whether that will happen, I still don't know.
Okay. But honestly, we could see him at Los Angeles either way, whether with the Clippers or the Lakers.
It's possible. Yes, it is possible.
All right. Perfect. Thank you very much, guys. We'll go on a short break right now. When we come back, we'll be discussing football. Start with the new guy. He's not new, so to speak, but I call him the new guy that will be moving to Los Angeles as well. Don't go anywhere, guys. So going straight to football right now, we'll start with the new kid on the block that is going to LA, in the person of Gareth Bale, whom at one point everybody thought could potentially be a Ballon d'Or moving to Real Madrid for that big money Of course, this guy won like 4 or 5 Champions League with Real Madrid, being one of the major protagonists in 3 of those Champions League victories alongside Ronaldo and Benzema. Olale, I'm going to start with you. And I'm just going to roll out a little bit of statistics here before I ask you my questions. Since 2008 up until 2021 or 2022, the highest number of games Bill have managed to play in a season is 36, and that was in 2011. Out of all his years with Real Madrid, even at the time that he was speaking real well, the highest number of games he played with Real Madrid was 31 games in a season. And the rest, you have 27 games, 23 games, 19 games, 26 games, 29 games in 2018, 2019, 2020, 20, you had just 16 games. And 2021, 2022, you had just about 5 games or thereabouts in the La Liga with Real Madrid. And you are wondering, this guy, overall, is he a good move moving to the US right now? Is he a good move for him, or could he have gotten a better option? And I remember Kachi clearly stating it, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, that the best option would have been to play at Newcastle, that needs a protagonist like Bale, a catalyst like Bale to uplift them to the next level, given that they have all the money in the world. But having a guy like Bale will attract good players. Why is he running away from this kind of option to go to the United States, where we know is the retirement home?
Now, I agree with Kachi about going to Newcastle. I actually fell in love with that possibility. Yes, it might not be at the peak, but it's a kind of player, a player that could probably help Newcastle to attract some big talent. But I was listening to talk radio, one particular sports radio this thing from in the UK. The only offer Gareth Bale received from any European club this offseason was from Cardiff City. So, which means most of these top clubs don't fancy him, and this is something that has to do with the reputation. A lot of them, they probably saw what transpired with him in Real Madrid. I think they don't consider him as part of any serious project at this point of his career. I think most of them stayed away. I think the only people probably benefiting anything from Caribbean by now is probably the Wales national team. Because I find it because the way the guy gets himself motivated anytime they had, because it's carrying them, of course, because this World Cup wouldn't have been possible without him in that squad. So for me, I think it's a matter of a damaged product on one hand, and on the other hand, like you said, even him, I'm not sure he's on his own part, he even made any attempt to probably even lobby for any serious club. I think he has given up on playing any serious football around Europe, and something just tell him that the sunshine, and for somebody who is injury prone, probably the early sunshine will be good for him to probably ease his bones and probably extend his career a while.
Perfect. Thank you very much for that, Olale. Kachi, are we saying categorically, can it be stated categorically that this guy is done for a top level? Is that why he's moving over to the US? Because sometimes you just look at it like, oh, this is Bale. He scored one of the best UEFA Champions League final goals. He can still do it for a club like, I don't know, for Newcastle, Spurs, Everton, and host of second-tier clubs, even for Manchester United. And you see him going over to the US to rest. And like Olale said, he's more interested in playing golf than playing football.
You can never say never. I think the only person that can say anything certainly is God Almighty. I think he has to use this 1 year to prove himself again. by what he is able to achieve. And a case in point would be Zlatan, who we thought when he moved to LA Galaxy had moved to the US to retire.
Yeah.
But based on what he was able to do, the AC Milan leadership saw it fit to bring him back into top-flight European football and tell him, you may not be guaranteed every game, but you will play and you can mentor the up-and-coming stars. So Gareth has every possibility to return to, if not the biggest clubs or one of the biggest clubs in Europe, but to a decent club that will compete for titles, hopefully, in any of the leagues in Europe. But the narrative has to start to, The narrative needs to change going forward. First, based on what he says when he addresses the press. Secondly, based on, he has to have a good PR. Because say what you will about Paul Pogba, what has made Paul Pogba being able to go back to Juventus? Because I sincerely think Paul Pogba had the kind of season Gareth Bale had the last 2 to 3 years. However, we know that in that same 2 to 3 years, Madrid courted Paul Pogba, PSG courted Paul Pogba, Juventus wanted him. So what the major difference was the PR and the management. So now Gareth Bale has to let his club football form do the talking.
Yeah.
He also has to stop spewing bile from his mouth and say the right thing, because he's 32 years. He still has 3 really good years at the top flight before deciding to do anything he wants to do. And then thirdly, he needs to let his agent also guide the things, the news around him. It's just unfortunate that even when he's not talking, the news we hear around it. I mean, you don't come out at the press conference to say, oh, I don't know what the future holds, but I know I'm not going to Getafe. What if Getafe was the only option for you to bounce back? And you look at a Christian Eriksen, who decided to go to Brentford and is now being courted by Manchester United. So it tells you sometimes you might need to take a step back, but remain in a relevant league to get the big guys to see you. Even if you take it outside actual players and look at coaches, Ancelotti took an Everton job before he went back to Real Madrid, and now he has done what no other coach in European football has done. So a lot of things for Gareth Bale to change before that possibility can be seen. But it is very possible that he returns to the top flight.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Kachi. I'm going to stay with you, Kachi. Jude Bellingham from Borussia Dortmund. Looks like everybody is mooting the guy right now. Liverpool is mooting. Of course, Manchester United wants him potentially, and he's not going to come at a very crazy fee. The fees being touted right now is about £45 million. Which of these two options do you think will be better for the young lad?
None right now. I think he still needs to develop in football. Sometimes players leave clubs prematurely, especially players in Dortmund. Yes, a few have gone ahead to succeed. A few were even there ahead of their time. And I sincerely think that this young man who just moved to Erling Haaland is one of those. But Dortmund and their transfer deal and the players who have come out from there have shown me many times over that some players leave when they are not right. From Mario Götze moving when he needed to play 1 or 2 more years in Dortmund, he moved to Bayern Munich and he flopped. We'll go to Nuri Sahin, moving, doing all he could. He moved away when he still needed another year or two of development in Dortmund. He flopped. We'll look at the guys struggling now in Manchester United. Sancho probably needed another year or two to develop better, and he flopped. So I think for Bellingham, the pressure will be too much to move to a bigger club right now. There has to be emotional maturity, which you don't get by just having one very good, amazing season in Dortmund, because Dortmund insulates you. You need to play another year and start to prep yourself. I don't think he should move. This is my personal thought. However, the power of money is very, very strong. These young players, a lot of them want to secure the future of their parents, retire their parents, And sometimes they will take that money, even if it will mean struggle at the clubs they go to. But if you ask me,
so if I ask you,
if you ask me which of these two clubs, my take would be no, stay one more year, especially learn from the mistakes of others, get better, and then you can think of moving.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Kachi. Olale, I'm going to come to you straight with that. Still on the same topic, before Jubilee moved to Borussia Dortmund, Manchester United were closely linked to the guy while he was at Birmingham City. Do you think it's like Kachi said, moving now back to United is going to be premature, or in the case of Liverpool, where you have Jordan Anderson, James Milner being held, and they could be shifted pretty soon away from that club, do you think it's going to be a short or a premature move for Jude, like Kachi rightly said, or like Kachi said? I agree with Kachi anyways, that's why I use the word rightly.
I don't think the Liverpool move is going to be a bad move at this point. If he was to move to Liverpool, number one, it's a stable club. I don't think that pressure is really much on him to, let me say, hit the ground running. They have a very stable midfield, and he's an English boy. I'm not sure the pace of the Premier League is something that will be new to him. Like I said, I think if Liverpool probably are knocking at the door at £45 million, which I think could not probably put a bit of, would not probably put pressure or, let me say, focus on him. If he was going for, let me say, around 18, 19 million, it's another thing entirely. I think if the chance to move to Liverpool and he feels he's up to the challenge, I think he should take it. He's actually a very talented boy. Jurgen Klopp is a very great coach. There's actually a slot for him to play in that midfield. The Liverpool midfield, like we always know, is more about just keeping it simple. I see somebody like him adding a bit of creativity, and it gives them more option. He will not go into that Liverpool team starting week in, week out. But of course, in every four games, you expect him to start at least two, come in as a substitute in one. So, which I think will ease the pressure. I'm sure the Jurgen Klopp will ease him into the team gradually. He will not join the team to perform magic. Unlike United, as much as the United transfer looks attractive, probably from the coach's point of view, I'm sure you fancy playing under a coach like Erik ten Hag, but because of the current state of the team, the instability in the team presently, and the expectation that will be on his neck to eat the ground running,
yeah,
I think United move for now is going to be a bad move, but I think Liverpool move is not as bad as you people are looking at it.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Thank you very much for that. Balali, going from one situation to the other, and I'm pretty sure you I think I just said this before when we started the show, that the Arsenal leaders or the hierarchy seem to be getting it a little bit right. Anyways, I'm not going to stay with Olale. I want to stay with Kachi. Because I'm pretty sure Kachi has like one or two information about the Rams situation being closely linked to the way Arsenal are performing at in the transfer market. So I'll start with you, Kachi. Can you give us just share a little bit of light to how the relationship between the Rams, whom I wish so much bad luck last season, because I felt the owner, who are supposed to be owner of Arsenal, is not performing optimally. But now, you seem to have convinced me that their success is now being closely linked to the way, to the performance of Arsenal in the transfer market. Kachi, I can't hear you, Kachi. You muted.
Apologies for that. So, Kroenke, who also happens to own the LA Rams, saw the result of how being aggressive can lead to success in the short term. The Rams were known for drafting high, very high, but they decided to change that particular model, and they started going for signing tested and trusted hands to come help shore up that the Rams offense and defense. They did that with signing Odell Beckham Jr., they signed Von Miller, and they saw immediate success, appearing in 2 Super Bowls in 3 years. And economically, their most recent Super Bowl win, because they are the current NFL defending champion, invariably brought as high as $2 billion, both in value increase and in actual cash inflow to the Kroenke family. Wow. So I think that leads a bulb in his mind to say, why don't we emulate this model of being aggressive, spending money to get players that, if they don't even give us success in year one, we know that by year three, we will start to see results of this. I think that has led to an opening of the pause, so to speak, and allowing Arteta to go to the market aggressively and get players, even though Arsenal will not be competing in the biggest European tournament in Europe. I think another thing is, anywhere he goes to, he gets assurances that Mikel Arteta will be the real deal. I don't know where exactly he's getting that assurance from, because this is the same owner that in the winning years of the professor almost threw away the key to the purse, not allowing Wenger spend so much. But due to the success the Rams have had, due to the economic cash inflow coming from that success, he is trying to replicate that model. I also think that there is a slight jaw between two owners who are also friends in America. I'm talking of the new owner of Chelsea coming in, and the bowlers coming in to say they also want to be aggressive with their spending. We hear that Sterling is interested in coming. Uh-huh. So that capitalist tendency of spend to get results is now what is being replicated. And it's going to be a big shame if the Glazers do not, because that's what they're doing. They are not replicating their capitalist tendencies. Don't forget that the Glazers NFL team won the penultimate Super Bowl, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But even though the Buccaneers were aggressive in getting Tom Brady, in getting Gronkowski, the Glazers are not replicating that model in English football. Instead, they got paid another £11 million dividend very recently.
All right, Kachi, I'm still going to stay with you before I go to Olaale. Looking at the transfer activity of Arsenal right now, they've been able to secure, according to the biggest story breaker in the history of transfer news, Fabrizio. I think I'm getting his name right, right?
Fabrizio.
He already broke the news that the agreement has been done, full agreement with Gabriel Jesus. We know Vieira is over the line already from Porto. Lisandro Martinez from Ajax has been confirmed as well. So these are three good guys that have been one is going to be a left playing central back that could potentially replace Gabriel, while Saliba coming back. Arteta said Saliba is going nowhere. Saliba would be playing and deputizing for Ben White. Makes it potentially secured. In the middle of the park, we know Odegaard is the engine room when it comes to creativity for Arsenal. Vieira could potentially help them in that regard. Gabriel Jesus is going to replace the Lacazette and Aubameyang of this world with Eddie Nketiah, which looks solid, right? But the bone of contention, and I'll come back to Olaale to this, but I'm going to ask you for example to Olaale, is the transfer of Rafinha. Rafinha, £30 million bid was rejected with a further option of £10 million, add-ons of £10 million was rejected. So they are looking for a valuation of about £55 to £65 million for Rafinha. Is it too much to spend on Rafinha? Coming from Olaale's perspective, I wasn't coming from Olaale's perspective when we started talking about it. I would have preferred to go for a Gapo and a Sir Gnabry rather than go for a Rafinha. That gives me valuation and it gives me volume in terms of wing play or front play. What do you think for your own thinking, your own line of thought, do you think Rafinha should be bought by Arsenal, given that it would be the direct competition according to Olawale, with Saka? I don't agree with Olawale anyways, but it would be in a direct competition with Bukayo Saka, who happens to be the athlete for Arsenal. He was the highest goal scorer anyways last season.
We don't know what formation Arteta has in mind. But even if he's going to retain the same formation, I still think getting Rafinha is a good deal. Especially looking at how City also showed up by getting Kevin Phillips. I believe they recently signed Kevin Phillips.
We'll get that shortly.
Okay. Yeah, even though there are direct, it's going to be competing directly with established players in the middle. So having more than one player playing a particular position, it's never a problem. I know Gnabry, I said Gnabry wasn't a good option. We concurred when we looked at what he was requesting for. I just think it was too pricey. Olawale would explain this further. His complaint is that they are almost similar players. But we've seen two left wingers, so to speak, fuse themselves into the same team. I've seen Riyad Mahrez playing together with Bernardo Silva and what's the other Silva that left City last year, and David Silva as well. So it depends on the formation. And too many good things is never enough. It's not too bad. It's when you don't, because right now Arsenal has shored up the central midfield. They are shoring up the center back. Why not have an option? Saka has not given us up to 50, 55, 60 games a season yet. So it tells me that at some point there will be a dip in form. There will be injuries. And then there will be an immediate option. We said Arsenal lost their top four simply because they did not play Nketiah, Thomas Partey or Elneny. They did not use their option well. It looks like Arteta has learned. And now he's saying, okay, I'm going to have options and I will not be blindsided due to deep in form or injuries anymore. I still think it's a good signing, especially if they have the money to buy it.
All right, perfect. Olale, you seem to have a dissenting opinion about Rafinha coming. You are not against the player, but you just think it's a luxury for Arsenal. Am I correct?
Yeah, of course. Luxury for Arsenal, especially in that position. And considering the fact that the star boy for the Arsenal team presently plays from that side. And these are two players that have probably shown to us that they are probably more comfortable playing from the right side, cutting in rather than playing
on the left side,
rather than stretching the pitch directly wide. So I've seen Rafinha a couple of times playing on the left. He has never been convincing. I've seen Saka is a bit better. But I think Arsenal has more options from that left side. There is Gabriel Martinelli, there is Smith Rowe, and there's a new guy that they signed. This Vieira guy that we heard that could play from the Odegaard role or play from the left side. So I think they have options from the left side, which means that leaves Saka and Rafinha still to battle on that right side. And it is not like either of them is offering something different from that right side. It is still the same way of cutting in and so. So that's my own. And again, if you now look at Arteta's ability to rotate, because everybody say it's actually very good to have a big squad, but rotation is not everybody's job. Not every coach is good at rotation.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the same Arteta that when
Aubameyang.
When Thomas Partey had that injury, he couldn't, he forgot that he had Mohamed Elneny on the bench until when it was probably too late. When Aubameyang was not firing, we never knew what was the name of this young guy.
Eddie Nketiah
can even be that productive. So, he has not really shown that he is that kind of a player who could be very, who is very sad when it comes to rotating his squad. Pep Guardiola is good at doing that. Probably Rafa Benitez doing his days at Liverpool. Alex Ferguson was very good at doing it. Mm-hmm. But it is not every coach's, what do you call it, area of strength. Not every coach could do it. I think Mourinho struggles a bit with rotation too.
Yeah,
Mourinho doesn't like it.
He prefers to have 18 to 20 man
14
squad
players that you understand. Maximum. So for me, that's just my my observation. I believe for a club like Arsenal, who don't really have that luxury, like Man City, who could buy a player that was going to sit on the bench for £100 million, I think that money could have been better spent in some other areas of the pitch. I think the center back could be improved, even CM or even the right back. I don't think that place is that pressing. Considering what is at stake to be the next thing for Arsenal to do now.
Okay. Kachi, you wanted to add something, or can I go on?
No, you can't go on.
All right, perfect. Olale, I'm going to stay with you now. Arsenal are looking at, they're looking at Ruiz from Napoli and Tillemans coming in. And I think I gave you a little bit of insight to it. Granit Xhaka moves further up the pitch when Arsenal is attacking. And we all know that Granit Xhaka's forte is not to attack. Giving a Ruiz to do that, or a Tillemans, will give you at least 5 to 10 goals every season, which potentially will improve Arsenal. While Arsenal is defending, they will be able to fall back as well to defend. Do you think Arsenal should, who of these two players do you think Arsenal should be looking at as their best option? Tillemans has just 1 year left on his contract, available for £25 million. Ruiz the same thing, £25 million.
Well, I think either of them is going to make Arsenal better, but probably I will probably prefer Tillemans because of for the fact that he's been in the league for a couple of years now, and sometimes we've seen players coming from Italian league, CM, struggling with the pace of the league, and whichever way, but I think both of them could be upgrade, because one thing that has not really changed about Granit Xhaka's game is irrational decision, which has really cost Arsenal a lot. Even forget about him getting lost going forward. Granit Xhaka, last season, I'm not sure that, I think he got up to 2 or 3 records in the Premier League last season. And those are, if you look at those records, they were very avoidable records. Silly decisions here and there. So, a lot of them leading to Arsenal either surrendering an advantage or something like that. So, I think Juri Tielemans is going to prove to be a
very good addition
to that. Okay. At least it gives them. He's not a defensive midfielder. He's a CM who I think, who I think man most like Thomas Partey. I think it's a good addition and a good option again to have in that CM position.
In that CM position. All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Olale, for that. Kachi, I'm going to come to you. £200 million burning hole in the pocket of TT right now. He has options. From Juventus, could potentially be joining Chelsea for about £65 million, I guess. Sterling has been mooted as well, £60 million for Manchester City. Ousmane Dembele, if given the option and the agreement that he will be a major player with Chelsea, could be moving as well. How do you see, especially with Sterling, how do you see this happen? For Sterling, I don't understand why Guardiola would want to let him go.
For Sterling's case, I'm trying to remember the name of that young star who I think Guardiola right now believes
Alvarez,
who I think Guardiola believes is ready to take up the gauntlet. That is why he can afford to consider trade options for Sterling. I think Sterling also needs a new challenge right now. I think so personally. I also think Sterling believes that somehow the swell in my African Nigeria palace, the swell where Yaya Toure's agent swore for Manchester City will mean they never win the Champions League. It's probably very likely, and this is me joking, it's probably very likely for Chelsea to win the Champions League again before City wins this. Yeah, but on a more serious note, I'm a bit surprised, and I'll be kind of disappointed if Tuchel enters that conversation with an Ousmane Dembele to start assuring a player that yes, you will be a major part. Anybody that they want to sign is a potential major part of the team. You just have to come in and prove yourself. You don't need any assurances from me to tell you will be a potential a keeper. How much assurance are you going to give a $60 million player that they did not give Romelu Lukaku for $100 million? Was Lukaku not guaranteed that he would be a major part? Did he live up to it? You know, so I still think Dembele is a better option than Sterling. It's a personal opinion, just for preference, simply because he has worked with TT before. I think the Leeds is a great signing if it comes, because that would be an instant replacement for Anthony Rudiger. who moved to Real Madrid very recently.
Yeah.
The new owners, they are coming in aggressive, the Boehly family. I've said it that it looks like them and Kroenke, they stand down and say, let's make this a very competitive league, even though it will be very friendly. 200 million, getting the right players, because critically what Chelsea needs, I think what Chelsea needs right now is a creative influence. Every single creative person they've gotten has not lived up to the billing. From Mason Mount to Christian Pulisic.
Yeah.
So instead of looking to spend, Akanziyech, who is being touted to come to AC Milan. Akanziyech, please, I'm looking at you. Please, we need you on that side. You will be guaranteed. You will be a key part. Let's give you the guarantee we cannot give Ousmane Dembele. But I think whatever they want to do, 60 or 70 million should be left to cater to the creativity in that middle, because the ball still doesn't move as freely as it should move in Chelsea. And I think it's a depth of creativity. But coming back, if they had to choose between De Ligt, Dembele, and Sterling, I would do it Dembele and Sterling. I think Dembele has a lot to prove, but he knows what Sterling, what Titi would demand, and he can fit in very well.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much. I don't know if Olale is with us right now, but I'm still going to continue with you to an interesting one. So Joe Mendes met up with Todd Boehly sometime this week to discuss the potential move for Cristiano Ronaldo to Chelsea. That changed the whole tide. And I could remember vividly last season when Roy Keane said, if Ronaldo plays in the Chelsea team with that much, the match where he's been giving us those chances, because the stats were broken down, if he gets back into the Chelsea team, he will score 50 goals. So that makes it much more interesting. Your thought on that?
It sounds interesting, but I think I also read recently that rumor is being squashed now, that it won't happen. But yeah, potentially
Manu came out to squash it, but we knew they met. So
yes, I think they met. But the truth is, Chelsea needs a proven goal scorer. We've known that whatever his name is, for some reason, I don't know why I keep forgetting all the Chelsea players' names. We know Lukaku has gone, even though it's on loan. Timo Werner has been misfiring. There's a crisis of confidence there, even with the German national team. So it's not just a Chelsea thing. He has to work on his psyche. Kai Havertz is not a proven out-and-out nine. So there is a lack of a number nine. And Cristiano Ronaldo right now wants to play every game. He can be guaranteed, and he will be guaranteed, the biggest games in Chelsea. There's no doubt about it. He's going to get goals, but how much chances are Chelsea really, really creating when we look at it? Maybe marginally better than what Manchester United are creating, but Chelsea is not really creating that much of chances that we say, oh, Ronaldo will get there and score 80 goals. I think there's still something. If they get a creative enforcer or a brain like a Christian Eriksen come to Chelsea and you pair him with a Ronaldo, then we can start to have that conversation. But with the current Chelsea setup, I think Ronaldo will struggle like Lukaku also struggled.
All right, perfect. Balali, I'm going to come to you. Interesting. The meeting between Ronaldo and the agent of Ronaldo and Chelsea, and the owner of Chelsea. Do you see Ronaldo moving to Chelsea?
If there is a... yes, it's possible. You can't really tell because for this kind of news to, like Kachi said, you can't... So one thing is very certain. There have been discussion behind the scene. I'm sure Ronaldo must have looked at United and like no, this 1 year remaining is like it's going to be another wasted.
One of his reasons, anyways, that United are not active in the transfer window. Blah blah blah.
So for him, I think Chelsea for him will be probably better being a London club. Yes, they've had their years of rivalry with United, but for him it won't be that bad, or compared to City last season. So for me, I think it's something that could happen, but I just like Kachi said, it's just very funny. I think Chelsea has some fundamentals which you people to have been saying they have some fundamental things they need to resolve, and I think one of the issues we agree that Ziyech has been misfiring. He has not really performed up to what we expected of him. Christian Pulisic, the same thing. Injury has not really been fair to him. So I think Chelsea need to address either they want to play a 3-5-2 or a 3-4-3. If you are going for a 3-4-3, that means you need, because I think the reason why this formation worked for Conte was because of the exploit of Eden Hazard, Pedro, and Williams. Those guys were on top of their game. And one of the reasons why Lukaku struggled last season for me, it was because of the chances were not really coming, in terms of the chances created. As much as Mason Mount is valuable to this team, when you play Mason Mount, that means you have to play 3-5-2 because Mason Mount doesn't play like a winger. He plays like a number 10, whereas his creativity is not up to it. When you play 3-5-2, if you check the Brazilian team of those days, the Argentines of those days, they actually play 3-5-2. And that is where they always have that number 10, who is free to do a lot of things, because he has maximum protection around him. The Riquelme, the Maradona, Ortega, in Brazil, of the Rivaldo, and those. So because of the structure of the 3-5, it gives that number 10 all the freedom, and it frees that number 10 from the defensive responsibility. So that is what Chelsea actually needs if they want to stick with 3-5-2. If not, they need to get two wingers to flank a striker and play a 3-4-3 straight.
All right, perfect. You know, that's always been my goose against TT, and I'm not going to change. And I feel if it does not change with this new season, he needs to be sacked. Honestly, I don't care if he won the champion. He won the Champions League off an infura.
I think he was lucky. Debo, I think he was lucky that Abramovich sold the club.
Exactly, because
I'm sure his position will have been reviewed at the end of this season.
Exactly, because the way I see it, no, honestly, Kachi, I'm not so much invested in Chelsea. But I think, and I'm convinced beyond reasonable doubt that he can get more out of this current Chelsea team, even with their predicament. He can get more out of them, but it's not. But let's see what happens next season and who they are going to sign potentially. So I don't want to burn so much thought on this. Barca are putting a final bid for Lewandowski.
Barca has the money. Do they have the money?
They said they are putting a final bid of £42.5 million for Lewandowski. Take it or leave it. And if he does not, then Liwa is in great trouble because I don't know where Liwa is going to go next.
Don't worry about it.
Olawale. Let's move to other better things. Clement Liglet is potentially going to Spurs on loan for 1 year. Nasir El Khelaifi, the president of PSG, has been acquitted of corruption. Again, this is the second time he's been acquitted of corruption. But we're going to be staying in PSG right now. Nasir came out over the course of the week to say, right now, if you are not ready to play and stop off the court, off the pitch antics, be ready to be shipped out of PSG. And that was a direct target at no other person than Neymar. And Neymar, a couple of days after, through his agent, came out to say he wants to leave PSG if the chance comes right now. So that's, and I'm going to give you the top story that is coming out of PSG right now. Mbappe said Pochettino killed their creativity with his negative mentality. So those are three things I'm potentially discussing at PSG. Kachi, I'm going to start with you. Do you want me to rephrase them or do you hear me right? Or should I split it between the both of you? Kachi, I can't hear you. I think you are muted.
I heard you right, Debo, and I guess it's clear now that the era of Mbappe as the GM of PSG has started. Mbappe has decided to pitch his tent with Messi and has thrown Neymar under the bus right now, unfortunately. But it was bound to happen at some point because, I mean, this is someone that we've known that for 3 out of the 4 years he stayed there. There's always a particular time towards his sister's birthday that he gets injured, you know. So where there's smoke, most times there's fire there. I said most times. So we can't rule that out. Neymar has not lived up to that billing, even in a farmers league such as that. Secondly, I think it's a disservice to Pochettino to come out to say he plays negative football. I totally do not think Pochettino plays negative football. However, I think, similar to Gernot Rohr, Nigeria's Super Eagle former coach, is unable to make in-game adjustments when plan A fails. I don't think that speaks of negativity. That just speaks of death of creativity. Pochettino will get another club and we will see him succeed.
He will be sacked.
Sources are saying that he's already been sacked. I guess they are just discussing severance pay right now. The PSG has never hidden the fact that the Champions League is the target. It has always been the target. But they need some form of seriousness. Now, my fear really is, which coach will now be interested in coming to a club where you have clearly shown that you have given this player, your player has this much power, you know? So it's a two-edged sword. It's a sword that is good to read out the negativity and like in Neymar, which I think Neymar will not leave. There's no club that will pay him the money that PSG is paying him right now.
Exactly.
So it will get Neymar serious. But the second thing is, no coach what he sought will want to come to a club and say, oh my God, not only do I have three very large egos here that I need to manage and manage the other players that are not this big of an ego. Secondly, anything I want to do, I must run it by this 21-year-old boy who was invited by the NBA commissioner to come and grace the NBA draft. That is too much player power that may not bode well for PSG in the short term, not necessarily the long term.
All right, maybe if they have the number of Salas Ferguson, they should call us Salas Ferguson. Olale, nobody's going to pay them that money.
Neymar
staying is going to be a problem.
No, I think there was an interview I heard. The man told the PSG fans, I think they were agreeing that they should prepare to assess his way for the next, let me say, 4 or 5 years. You see, bottom line, Kashi have just said this. This PSG is a typical example of how not to run a football club. In as much as the most valuable asset in a football club is your star players, but you don't openly
give them power.
Give them the power to run.
They've not done it openly.
How did me and you got to know about it? You understand? And it's so bad for them that this was the same power that was given to Neymar. You remember Neymar initially got there, that penalty problem. Who is going to take penalty between him and Cavani? Of those kind of issues up and down. I think it's just a total mess. And like Kachi said, something that is very obvious that we have coach or GM Mbappe now. So which coach will come and take a job that is going to report in to GM Mbappe at this point? So it's a total mess for them. And I don't think any club is ready to pay Neymar that money, considering his antecedents and history. And joking, let me ask you this question. Do you think Madrid now, after winning champions with these young boys and the veterans, do you think Neymar is the next thing they need? No. Barcelona doesn't even need that kind of thing. No. Not Man City. No. PSG. Not Bayern Munich. No.
Bayern Munich.
Not Liverpool. No. Manchester United is another club that was just looking for another star. We know.
So that they can pay more dividends. So that they can pay more.
You understand? not serious. At this point, we probably take Neymar. I think PSG should be prepared to live with Neymar or he's tired of them.
All right, perfect. Moving on to other things. Hakim Ziyech has added over a transfer request to move to Milan on loan, potentially, and reduce his wages while moving to Milan as well. And to a not so juicy one, the contract standstill between Mo Salah and Liverpool still subsists. Kachi, I think I'm going to end up with this on the show. City has agreed a £42 million deal for Calvin Phillips from Leeds United to Manchester City. I don't know why they need him. They have Rodrigo, but they already agreed. Officially, I will call Lukaku a flop now that he has agreed his loan with Inter Milan. He has failed with Manchester United. He has failed with Chelsea. So we agree that he is a flop. But to the root of the whole issue, Salah wants £400,000 only per week, and Liverpool are not willing to pay Salah that money. Kachi and Olale, we have 1 minute and 48 seconds left. Does Salah want £400,000 every week?
Well, go on, Wale.
Exactly. If Paul Pogba, at least if those overpaid Manchester United players, how much is Rashford earning?
I think like 350.
So you should give Salah. I think the Premier League should contribute to pay Salah, if that is the case.
Yes. Right now, I think Salah is definitely worth £400,000.
And why is Liverpool not giving him? Is it because he's an African? Is it because
No.
I don't think
which structure.
It's a model. It's a model that they are applying, and sometimes it's difficult to change what is working for you. They enjoy success. They are drafted or they are signing very well. They have a very good scouting program. They know that they may struggle for a year or two if he leaves, but they also know that with Klopp guaranteeing to be there for another 3 to 4 years, that their dip would not be as drastic as Manchester United. But I think they will get an agreement. He will get his 400, but they may not give him more than 2 years extension.
All right, perfect. That's the show. And my name has not changed. I'm still Adebola Adejare. So we'll see you again next week. Keep supporting sports. Bye, guys.